We are diving into some recent shifts that have been happening in the tech industry. In this one, I wanted to talk about probably one of the biggest topics that has been on your radar. If you are an InVision user or had an account, you probably have been getting some emails. So that is one thing about InVision shutting down. I want to explore kind of the conversation that has also been happening quite a bit online around the AI bubble bursting, right? Like the dot-com bubble happened, or like what happened with the dot-com bubble, and everything kind of like bursting. I think we are quite at the end of that, but I will touch on that a little bit. I also want to dive a little bit into the Apple Vision Pro through the lens of a tech startup and what that might look like. And finally, what has become of the Rabbit R1 and the Humane AI Pin? Those products have been released and announced for quite some time now, but over the past few weeks, we've kind of seen a big trending down of things, right? Everything has been slowing down a little bit, and we have seen a lot of trend down. So those are some of the things that I want to talk about today. And my name is Varima Henry. Welcome to Dive Into Product, the podcast. I do this sometimes every other week, depending on time and capacity. I hope that I will be doing it a little bit more though. I want you to check out my blog on dobetterux.com, where I share frequent thoughts and insights and learnings, around things that people building products might be interested in. I'm guessing that if you're listening to this or watching this after the fact, you are somebody who is into building product in some way. You might be a technical person, a designer, or somebody who is into product management. I speak about all those topics on the blog post. This is something that I share quite often, two, three, maybe sometimes five posts every week. So while you are there, please do consider signing up to my monthly newsletter where I go a little bit deeper into the topics that I cover on a day-to-day basis within that month. So the Dive Into Product newsletter comes out once a month. Please do consider subscribing for that, because it kind of has a little bit richer, all-round view and context of what I have been covering within that month. So that is it, me blabbering about who I am and inviting you to check out dobetterux.com. That is the main house of everything that we do here. So let's get into today's topics. So I want to start with InVision. InVision has been a product that I think, depending on the age and maturity of your product design career, or product career, you might have different perspectives around what InVision is, or how it worked. You might know or not know of InVision, but InVision was basically once at the surface of a lot of designers. If you were in the era of UX design or product design in the days of Sketch, Sketch was not a great way of prototyping. I mean, prototyping has really come a long way. If you look at what Figma and other tools can do now, almost bring your products to life. This was not a thing back in the days when we used to build screens in Photoshop and Sketch, right? Sketch was a much lighter way and better way of doing things, but rather still quite clunky when it comes to building prototypes. And InVision basically came in as a component, a partner product that you can use to build products. And at some point, InVision's user base was reported to be over 7 million people, right? And it was a shock when I started seeing the emails coming from them. I kind of like ignored it for some time, and I started seeing people talking about it on the internet, and they're shutting down this year. By the end of 2024, Envision won't be there. Now, this is a big company, big enough company that has had quite a big impact on a lot of projects. I'm sure quite some people are still using Envision right now. I'd be interested to know if you are still within the era of Sketch and Envision, if that's your tool set currently. Let me know in the comments, wherever you're listening or watching this. I'm sure out of that 7 million user base plus, 7 million plus user base, there is still people using that in one way or another. Now, Envision grew from just the prototyping platform into other different type of tools that they had within, you know, their bigger company. So from the prototyping, I think there was also collaboration tools that were later acquired by companies like Miro or Miro. But yeah, their service Freehand, which was part of their Envision suite, was basically acquired by Miro or Miro. And that's when I kind of started paying attention to everything, to, you know, I started seeing this trending down. And so, you know, all of this, we understand that this is where Envision is right now, but what really happened, right? So looking back over the past 5-10 years, we have seen the migration from designers, product people using Photoshop basically for everything, UX design, UI design, mainly UI design, right? I think the concept of UX design was mainly still in the UX research part of, you know, building products, right? But when we started seeing a lot of people generating user interfaces with Photoshop, Sketch really came in and dominated the market. And that's when we saw Envision taking kind of, you know, a piece of that market, because they saw that Sketch did not have a prototyping component within it. And this was something that a lot of UX designers wanted to use to validate their ideas. So you would design a couple of screens and you would, you know, prototype it, whether to your stakeholders or your users, and get some feedback. That was the main use case of this. And it was great, but it was quite basically that, right? It was really good at doing one thing, and it was just that. And what we started seeing with other competitors that started coming into the space, like Figma and Adobe XD, is that they were kind of all-round tools you could design and prototype in the same space, right? And I personally think that Envision started having a little bit of identity crisis, right? We started seeing them getting into whiteboarding tools, right? I think that's when they created kind of like their Freehand. And they were really good at the stuff that they did. And I don't know why this company is shutting down, to be honest. But they were really good at the product. Even if you go on, apparently you can still sign up for their product even now. I don't know if there's a reason to do that. But if you look at the product right now, they're really good at, you know, kind of like, now they've went in into this workshopping space. I think the pandemic was a big driver of that, right? And they're really good at what they're doing. And I don't understand why, you know, they're kind of really keeping their niche and not expand on the functionality. I think it's maybe a design philosophy that have come back to bite them as a business, because the tools around them, if you look at Figma, we've got FigJam, which basically does, you know, what I think Freehand and Miro, you know, is doing. But you kind of have everything in this one product offering, right? It is a package. It is still, you know, a separate thing that you can use, but you can, you know, kind of like interchangeably quickly move things around FigJam and Figma, which makes things a little bit much easier for users to get from ideation into design, right? So the rise of the competitors that came within this space, mainly Figma, in this case, right, had not only more features, but I think they also had much smoother and slicker integrations into people's workflows, right, and into other existing things. And they also made it quite easy for you to just import your sketch files into Figma and change your whole workflow altogether, right? And all this happened so fast, while InVision kind of like stayed behind, lagged behind, became actually a little bit more clunkier. I would say that if anything, Sketch, I think they did start developing some features of their own within Sketch. I remember using different tools. There was one called Zeppelin, there was InVision, kind of like different ways to prototype Sketch designs, right? I don't know how robust the tool is right now. I have not used it for years since I started using Figma. And yeah, now I'm in a phase where I might be actually stepping away from Figma into another tool. Let me know if you're interested in knowing what that tool is that would pull me away from Figma, as you know, an avid product designer who has been doing this, you know, for about 10 years now, mainly in the design space, I would say. So the competition was tough, it was fast, it was slicker. Basically, I would say we can attribute the fall of InVision to the competition that Figma brought to the table, right? I think there was a lot of things that Figma offers, and we saw quite rapid development of their product as well, from launch inception to what they are now. I think that there has been a lot of rapid gradual releases, and with kind of like heavy hitters in way you do integration, building the community of tools around, you know, the product itself. So yeah, I think that is what kind of beat InVision, right? Now, I don't know how the business side of things looks like. I have interacted with InVision personally on some projects that I was doing with some big corporates back in like 2017, 2018, I think. And I really thought that they had a big expansion plan. I really thought that they had good representation, you know, even here in South Africa. So I'm interested to know what you guys think happened on the business side of things. Did they just not raise enough funding as a startup? Did they raise enough funding but did not put it in the right places? Did they focus too much on what they were really good at doing and not diversify enough? I don't know what the answer is, and I'm interested to know what you guys think. Are you an InVision user today? Have you recently signed up for InVision without knowing that this was something that was happening? Did you know that InVision was actually going to close now in 2024? I'm interested to know how much of this you know of, how it's affecting your career, your design flow, and what you think really happened with InVision. I'm happy to interact with you wherever you can comment. Or catch me over on LinkedIn. The links are in the description wherever you're watching or hearing this. I want to move on over to the next topic. Next up on the topics that I want to discuss today is the Apple Vision Pro. And it has been a month now into the Apple Vision Pro release, actually seeing people having it in the wild. I'm still trying to get my hands on one. I have not been able to. Maybe because I'm not a big tech reviewer and I live in South Africa, but that is how it is. Anyway, I have recently started seeing another conversation brewing on the internet around looking at the Apple Vision Pro as a platform for startups. And this is both for new startups who are looking to get in into this space, as well as I think for current businesses who want to spin up, you know, new products and things like that. I don't know if I would say that those are startups as well, but it's quite interesting when you start looking at it, because it's a whole type of, you know, kind of like medium that is becoming mainstream, hopefully. I don't know if that is a real thing, or is it just because I'm an Apple fanboy and I think that this is going to go mainstream because, you know, of the Apple Vision Pro. That is another take that I'm interested to find out what you guys think about. With all the hype of the Apple Vision Pro, is this something that we are, obviously with the price point, it is not accessible to a lot of people at $3,500. That's more than 40 or 50,000 South African rands, right? That won't be accessible to a lot of people. However, I do see that a lot of people will purchase this for special use cases, especially companies, right? And I think that's why this conversation has been coming up quite a lot, right? Now, we've seen a lot of adoption of things like the Meta Quest 2. I think they've got a pro version now. Being adopted quite a bit within the training environments, especially within dangerous environments, so things like rescue, things like military operations, and also we have started seeing some developments within the healthcare space, of which that is the one that I am most interested and excited about, to see more of that space developing, right? We have started seeing more and more technology within that space, within the realm of the accessible tech that we have, you know, our mobile phones, etc., etc., and computer screens. But adding this level of AR, VR is something that is quite exciting. And I don't know if it is something that we should give out to Apple, to saying that it's actually the Apple Vision Pro that has made this mainstream. I mean, most of the productivity things that you can do with the Apple Vision Pro, you can do them with, you know, almost any other you know, good enough competitor product out there, like the Meta products. But just like the iPhone, I think Apple has got kind of the spice, the secret sauce to making things a little bit more mainstream. So if you think about the iPhone, if you think about the Apple Watch, making, you know, that a little bit more mainstream, I think that is where the opportunity is, right? Of making this whole mixed reality thing a little bit more accessible, a little bit more mainstream for everybody, right? Now, what does this mean for startups and people who are looking into this? I think there's a potential here to create whole new products that are, especially within the mindfulness space and the healthcare space, I think there's a lot that can be done with the immersiveness to create sessions for therapy and environments where people can engage with healthcare professionals in other ways that we have been limited in doing with kind of like our basic ways of interactiveness right now. Now, with the way that the Apple Vision Pro kind of, you know, captures your screen, your face, and projects that as a 3D avatar, of course, that is in beta right now, as good as it looks. I don't know how that part would be important for the healthcare professionals themselves to actually be able to see you, your full entire body. There has been a lot of conversation around, you know, how can this be a platform for new startups? And I think that other than the amazing, you know, mixed reality apps that we have seen over the years, we are actually going to start seeing much more better apps being built up there, and new use cases start being tapped into as more and more companies and people have access to these mixed reality products, right? Hardware. And this is really a new kind of like interaction paradigm, right? I think it's something that has been tapped into mainly within the gaming world. But I think that there's a lot of potential to make this a little bit more into like the day-to-day use cases that we have. But I think there is quite a lot that we'll start seeing in, you know, remote collaboration. You know, I think for industries like architects and designers, that is a very interesting space. We've seen a lot of online collaboration drive happen. I think that is what, you know, Figma was based on. And when it started, it was like, I'm not going to like, you know, work live with other people and stakeholders and see what I'm doing. But like, I think it has become quite a big phenomena. Obviously, the pandemic, I think, drove a lot of that, but it's something that we are seeing, right? I would also see a lot of this happening in language learning, medical training, and other medical use cases between patient and medical service providers. It'll be interesting to see what this looks like in just basic learning, right? For universities, for specialized degrees, you know, in mechanics or engineering or whatever it is, right? We have started seeing most of that happening already, but I would like to see what the next level looks like. And if you already know some mixed reality companies out there that have kind of like built their business from the ground up, I'm interested to know. Please, again, comment in wherever you can comment, where you're watching or listening to this from. But yeah, let's continue to the next topic. And the next topic is something that I think a lot of people have been worried about AI being part of our lives. We've seen a flood, right, of all these different products, and basically AI has been embedded into every fabric of our daily lives right now. You know, from just basic assistants, you see it in your email. Google has it, Microsoft has it, everybody has AI, and we've seen a plethora of AI tools, from video editing, from, you know, magic in every tool possible, in design tools, Figma, there's, you know, tons of plugins and things like that. And usually in the tech world, we call this a bubble, right? And usually at some point we expect this bubble to burst, right? And I think good news for a lot of designers and people out there is that that bubble is about to burst, right? And what does that mean? This means that we're gonna start seeing a little bit of stabilization with the products that really matter. Right, we're gonna start seeing trends in what products really change people's lives, and, you know, how are people using those things? What are the use cases? And I think from there, the use cases are going to start growing bit by bit, depending on, you know, how people use the products that actually going to stick, right? Now, we have seen a lot of rapid growth coupled with kind of like super widespread excitement and a lot of investors pouring, right, a lot of capital into, you know, AI products, right? And I think that now that we have seen that AI is limited to a certain extent, right, all these products kind of like do similar things. The nicheness of them have kind of like been diluted now. I think in the early days, it was really amazing, right? When you see a chat conversation, or something that can help you write better or whatever it is. Obviously, Google has their own, Microsoft has their own. So depending on which, you know, world you live in and what you like, you probably have looked at different sets of these products, right? So what is the difference, right? Is AI different, right? Is there any kind of like key distinctions from what would call the dot-com bubble to, you know, the AI boom, as some would like to call it, right? So I think unlike a lot of companies in the dot-com bubble, which eventually ended up being mainly an e-commerce bubble, right? And the big guys stayed, right? The Amazons of this world and, you know, certain business models and concept kind of stayed, right? And everything else kind of died off, right? I think the difference with AI firms is that these guys are making real kind of like tangible technologies. I think AI brings a different realm of things where you find real productivity benefits, right? Now, I've used some of these tools to do most of my content production work, whether it's scripting, whether it's doing research, whether it's clipping up down content into shorter bits and chunks and sizes that I can share on different platforms. They are quite real world, you know, kind of things that are coming out of this. Never mind the productivity stuff, right? Like there is things like self-driving cars, medical diagnosis tools, right? Automated customer service, right? Like real automated customer service, not kind of like those old school, what I would call old school dumb chatbots, right? Like these days you can get a real automated customer service built around AI, right? And these technologies have the potential and have already started revolutionizing a lot of industries, right? Talk about design, right? Talk about development, right? There's a lot of no-code tools. There's a lot of, you know, AI that can just write the code for you now, right? And I think as much as the bubble is about to burst, and I think the noise is going to come down over the next year or two, maybe even three, we are really starting to see more and more of where the dominance and the use cases are already, right? So yes, we are seeing a lot of things come down. We are seeing a lot of where the copycats are and kind of the products that are not going to make it versus the ones that actually make a difference. And things are coming down. But as much as they're coming down, we also are seeing a different wave of AI madness coming onto the market. Now, I think we've seen a lot of stuff in the digital space, but there's also a weird market that is coming out of hardware products that are built from the ground up for AI. And obviously I'm talking about the Rabbit R1 and things like the Humane AI Pin. And I want to segue to that topic actually, because that's my last topic. And where are those products? Now, I've been following them since they were announced. I've tried to get stats around, you know, kind of like, I know that the Rabbit R1 did quite a bit of sales, pre-launch sales. So I couldn't quite find the figures of what they actually made on pre-launch sales. And I don't know where the Humane AI Pin, when the Humane AI Pin release date is either. And it got me thinking, you know, just like after the hype had settled down, it got me thinking, are these products actually ready to ship, right? With the state of AI right now, I think we've all have experienced it in one form or another, whether in a chatbot, whether it's creating images with DALL-E, or whatever, Midjourney, you know, things that, tools that are out there. There's quite a lot of, you know, kind of duplicate type of idea around generative text, generative images. Everything is based around generative AI, right? With the experience that we've had, we've all kind of seen where AI is currently, right? It's not as accurate, right? There's a lot of inaccuracies, whether it's generating text or images, whether it's researching things. Sometimes it blatantly lies. The demos that these companies have shown us have been quite robust, quite sleek. I think a few months ago, we found out that Google had kind of faked their demo of, I think it was Gemini image generation or visual recognitions, something like that. And companies can do that, right? I mean, like the Humane AI Pin demonstration and announcement was kind of like, you know, things that they had set up and people tore it down on the internet, of course. It's like, okay, the amount of almonds couldn't, you know, possibly be the right grain. If you don't know the story, just look up Humane AI Pin announcement and yeah, you will find a lot of things that people just tore down that, you know, there's no way that the AI could have done that, right? Similar things with Rabbit AI. I think with the Rabbit R1, the use cases are pretty cool, but it's too sleek, right? Like there's no way that this thing is going to book you an entire holiday vacation just from two prompts of speaking to it, right? Like there's no way that the state of AI today is as sleek as these people are putting it, right? And is that going to cause a delay in this product's launches? Or is that just going to cause a lot of disappointment when these products are launched to whoever is going to buy them? Now, a lot of people have already kind of like pre-bought the Rabbit R1. I don't know what the sales look like for the $700 Humane AI Pin, which also has got like, I think like a $30 monthly subscription added on top of it. Yeah, are these products just AI scams in hardware, right? Like a lot of people have also been asking, like, why can't these products just be apps, right? Why does it have to be hardware built from the ground up? right? With the Rabbit R1 is a device that has got a screen, right? Like, why can't it just be a phone? Do you have to carry two different devices? This AI gadget and your phone, why can't you just have, you know, the is Google going to just get better at doing these things? And once Google does that, it kills all these products. Again, I'm interested to know what you guys think around this. I think I'm ranting a little bit. But the state of AI right now is stabilizing. I think the mask has been pulled off. I think we now know what concepts work or don't work and what are the use cases that people are interested in and what is the level of quality and accuracy coming out of it. I think we are in a better state where we understand what that state looks like, and the products that have been shipped, that are shipping today, all have those caveats in them. I think a few weeks ago, Google Gemini image generation had, you know, so much of correction that it was making the founders of the United States of America black people, right? Which is incorrect. Historically, it's not reality. And it just shows how these models can be manipulated, tweaked, and positioned to us to solve problems or build tools that we can actually use on a day-to-day basis. And how do we keep that secure is always a big thing on, I think, everyone's mind who's building these products, hopefully. I do think that we are approaching the tail end of, similar to what we've seen with crypto, blockchain, and all these other buzzwords that we've seen, you know, it's a 3-4 year real big buzzword until it settles down. We see the major players in that space, and it becomes, you know, the initial is a launch, right? Like, it's a big launch, and then we kind of like see that plateau and, you know, kind of like level down. And I think we're going to start seeing more and more of what that leveling down looks like over the next, you know, 2 years, 3 years. That's my thoughts around this. So closing off, I'm always interested to know what your thoughts are around this. The one of the main reasons why I do this podcast and this streaming stuff is so that I can speak with people on the internet more than, you know, some people are trying to grow a community of 1 million people, whatever it is. I'm not interested in that. I'm interested to speaking with, you know, the 100, 200, 300, 500 people out there that are interested in this type of conversation, and that I might have similar interest, and hopefully you'll find some value or learnings out of some of the topics that I share here, and some of the learnings that I have from my career. So closing off, I think there is a lot of exciting and usually confusing shifts happening in the tech world, and I think this podcast is starting to sound a little bit like a tech podcast, but I think tech is such the core of how we design products for people in the day and age that we're living in today. Tech is in the center of everything that we do, and I really want to dig in a little bit deeper every day, every week, every month with you guys on how we can build better products, how we can stay ahead of the curve as product people in making better products, better processes, and ultimately just sharing the different skills and methods that we use on a day-to-day basis. I hope that this discussion today sparked some curiosity in just angles of thinking. Please let me know your thoughts in the comments. Connect with me on LinkedIn. The links are in the description. And I will catch you in the next episode recording or live stream, depending on where you're listening to this from. Thanks so much for listening. I'm out.